Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. In the studio today, sitting in for Senator Jim DeBacus, is Representative Mark Wheatley. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much, Natalie. I'm excited to be here.
Nice to have you in the studio. And on the right, Representative Dan McKay.
Hey, good morning, Natalie.
And we don't
and Mark.
Yeah, and we don't have the Senate in the room today, so you guys can have
fun
in the House doing here.
Yes.
That's what we like.
Yeah, but Mark, we're excited to have you here. Can you just give us a little bit of background for our listeners, what area of the state you represent and just, you know, what you do in your spare time?
Yeah, thank you. I represent Murray and South Salt Lake, and I've been serving for six sessions. This is going on my 13th year. And I just retired from Salt Lake Community College not too long ago. I was an administrator there for about 15 years. Married to a wonderful Josie Valdez. We love Josie. Two sons and
he
four
comes from a political family, Dan.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, she ran for Senate.
She did.
Right?
She was a lieutenant governor candidate as well?
She was a lieutenant governor candidate.
That's when I remember meeting
right.
Josie. So, great. Well, it's good to have you.
Well, thank you.
Hey, we want to talk right at the top of the show about DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. This was widely rumored that Trump would, mention that he was going to defer the program and that he was going to put it over onto Congress. And, Dan, he did exactly what was rumored.
Yes.
You support what he did.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not even any inkling of hesitation.
None.
Is this because of overreach?
So let me
just, the policy?
There's an overreach thing, but there's a policy element mm-hmm. to it, too, right? So you just have to think back to... There's a couple elements, I think. Number one, this should have never been an executive order issue.
So and there's
it is
the overreach.
A questionable legality on where it was, right?
Okay.
Number one. But number two, and I think this is more of an insider issue, but legislative bodies are reactive. When there's something they must do, there's water on a skillet, there's an expectation, legislative bodies are at their finest.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the best
mm-hmm.
compromises are crafted. So what Trump has done is, I think, and people are going to, mock me for one reason, I think it's genius.
Yeah, this could be his first smart move.
He has put Congress on notice, and he's given them 6 months to solve the problem, an issue that, for all intents and purposes, every single Republican, but also every Democrat has been running on. We need immigration reform one way or the other. They may differ in the language that they ascribe to how the reform should be done, but they've all run on it. And they all need to be accountable. And so Trump stepping back and saying, you know what? We're not going to own this from an executive branch because it didn't belong here anyways. But we are going to put it on you and say, you've got 6 months to solve the problem. And,
well, Mark,
and he was wise.
Your level of discomfort is showing in your...
Well, I would certainly say it wasn't genius. However, I have to tend to agree. We do need legislation to spell this out. We have children that have come over to the United States, not through their parents, that have been here since they were toddlers. Some were infants. They know no other country. They know no other flag. They know no other pledge of allegiance. They're here because of their parents. And I think that it's absolutely incomprehensible that we cannot do something for these young men and women.
Yeah. Dan, sometimes there's this coldness to the way you present this, so I want to press you on this. Okay?
Thank you.
Well, it's this notion that you have all these tens of thousands of children, now adults,
mm-hmm.
some children now adults,
yeah.
who are here because of their parents.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
They don't know any other country. And from everything I've seen, these are people that are doing great things in our country.
No question.
You know, they're working at Google. They're working at Apple. They're...
At
you know, getting an education.
Those are the faces of the argument.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of that. So sure, it might be genius because he's forced a move on Congress, but what about the human cost here?
There was, I will say this, when you come to the United States illegally, from whatever country you are on, you are agreeing from the very outset of coming into any country illegally that you're going to live in that country with a certain degree of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And that is evident from the cash society that a lot of our illegal immigrants work in. It's difficult. I was just talking to a gentleman today who he works in the home building industry, and they have a lot of Hispanics who would like to buy homes here in Utah and would like to qualify in those kinds of things. But it's difficult to get them to qualify, not because they don't have the income stream or not because they don't make enough. It is because they don't have, you know, the necessary paperwork, one. And two, and even if they do have the necessary paperwork, because they're cash oriented or they got this cash oriented deal, it is tough to get them into homes. That's just one anecdotal element. But when you come to the United States, you agree, when it's illegally, that you are going to have some uncertainty in your life. And so the fact that government regulation is changing your life somewhat is uncomfortable.
If we're talking about children, some of these children, they didn't even know they were here illegally. It didn't come up to them until they became.
But Mark, parents make bad choices for their children.
They make
the time.
Bad choices, and then and when they're told that you're not here legally, they feel less than. And it's terrible to put children in that place.
I agree. Their parents made a huge mistake.
Why not go after the parents?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but see, you're heartless either way you do this, right? There is always a human cost. There is always a face to it. Because, and now you'll have to, when you listen to me, you have to understand, I don't know that I necessarily see a solution from the Democrat or the Republican side on what the right path is to a path to citizenship. I know that both sides of the aisle are talking about a path to citizenship
and
a right to citizenship.
I agree. I think that there ought to be a path to citizenship for these young men and women who have qualified for the program. Not everybody qualifies for the program. I've read some interesting statistics that there's approximately 800,000 Dreamers. And you have to be enrolled in school, you have to have a job, or enrolled into the military. So a lot of these individuals who are enrolled in the military are defending our freedoms. So we have to ensure that these young people who were brought here by their parents, and some of them may not know the language that, of the country that they came from, are not know it fluently, they were not educated in the school system, especially when it comes to Spanish. And we have to bring these people out of the shadows so that we can know who is here in our United States.
What are we seeing from our congressional delegation? I was happy to see Senator Hatch called President Trump and said, hey, don't do this.
Yeah.
DACA's, it's good policy.
Now, remember, Senator Hatch, the same time the executive order came down, thought that it was an abomination, it was a terrible idea, right? Mm-hmm. And now that is the traditional way that things are done in this country, whether it, you know, in whatever issue it might be. Mm-hmm. What you do is, here's the template. You get a little bit out there so that people are used to having it. And then when the next administration comes to take it away or change it or do something else, you now have a face of that problem who can show up to public hearings and can complain about whatever issue it is. And that is why, in my opinion, the Medicaid expansion issue was really difficult in the state of Utah, was we were afraid to introduce a lot of people having a benefit with the idea or possibility that it would then be repealed by a president and a Republican majority in both House and Senate, both standing there saying, we're going for a repeal. And Utah at the same time is saying, well, we don't want to expand Medicaid because of all this uncertainty.
But we have nobody to blame except for ourselves. Congress has been derelict in their responsibilities to pass.
Both parties.
Yeah. The last major piece of immigration reform was during the Reagan administration. And so we have a duty either to elect new congressional reps and senators, or we have to ensure that they work across the aisle to pass comprehensive immigration reform.
I want to be optimistic about it, that Congress is going to do something, Dan. I would hope it's quicker rather than later. I don't like the 6-month uncertainty.
It won't
uncertainty
happen until the
very end.
Month and
I know,
29th
I know.
Night at 11:59.
I will warn, as the person who thinks about the Utah economy and the U.S. economy, there will be an economic price for us.
But look,
turning
at how
away immigrants.
Darn it, we have time. Sorry, we're up against a hard break. Can we come back to this, Natalie? Because this is a great question.
We certainly can. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Representative Dan McKay and Representative Mark Wheatley. Stay tuned. We'll continue to talk about DACA and other important issues.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts and more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
And I'm Mark Wheatley on the left.
Natalie Gochner, and I represent the political center. I take the best ideas from both the left and the right and serve the community.
And botch them and totally destroy them and then implement them. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, so on, let's just finish up talking about the immigration issue. I just want to get both of your feelings on this. When I think of immigration, I think first of the human cost and you know, dividing families, and I'm uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
I think about public safety.
Yeah.
That's a huge issue. I think about labor needs, labor shortage in this country and in our state. Turns out that immigrants have the backgrounds for the two most important labor shortages. One would be high-skilled scientists, you know, technologists, engineers. Immigrants are good at those fields. And then hourly work, whether it's, you know, in the tourism.
Non-salaried.
Yeah, it'd be tourism, it'd be construction, it'd be landscaping, it'd be a lot of things. But those are the places that immigrants feel. And when they feel those labor shortages, the middle rises.
Yeah.
So I would argue from an economic point of view that immigration is very pro-economy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would agree. And, you know, I was listening to a program the other day on my way to work, and they were talking about the shortage in manufacturing jobs, that they cannot find enough individuals to work in those fields. And this is a perfect opportunity to have some of our immigrants participate in that arena, because manufacturing has been one of the number one issues from our president that he wants to see expanded, and want manufacturing jobs coming back to the states.
Dan, close out immigration. Anything more you want to say?
You know, I also think of the economic costs that go along with a dysfunctional immigration system, right? Where the labor supply is artificially high or artificially low on one way or the other, or too specialized in one area. This is way too wonky, but at the end of the day, borders are manufactured themselves. You know, the idea that a border is going to separate, you know, you'd never draw a line in a river and say, okay,
the economy
this side
stops
of the river
here.
Can't go over here.
Yeah. Think of the Utah County, Salt Lake County line.
Yeah.
It's invisible to the economy.
Yeah, it's completely
well, actually,
together.
I can feel a change when I leave Salt Lake County.
It's very well
your
said.
Soul darkens. Is that it? Well, for me, you know, and I probably have a different perspective than most. I grew up in San Diego, California, which is right on the border. It was quite normal as a scout troop. We would go down and camp south of the border when I was a kid. I mean, that was just how things were. And we were, you know, in and out. You know, I speak broken Spanish.
They allowed you to come back.
And they allowed me to come back. I'll just say this. There is a strong sense of xenophobia, I think, that drives this, you know, I'm afraid that my culture will change. I'm afraid that someone's going to take over. I think that thinking is small time.
I agree.
And it is not positive. It's not productive. And if people continue that thinking and it leads towards a national aggression against immigration, that's where I think our immigration our economy will be even worse off because of those issues.
Well, I guarantee we'll talk about this again. Our producer off air said something interesting. She said, whenever Utah makes national news, it's usually not good news. So we had the University of Utah hospital nurse, Alex Wubble, who, you know, has shown a courageous side of nursing, I must say that. And we've had our Salt Lake City government, the police department, the mayor, having to recover from a really tough situation.
It's like one thing after another in Salt Lake City, right? It just feels like the city is spiraling on a regular basis from some terrible thing that's happened, and we're constantly in recovery mode in Salt Lake City, I think.
This is making me laugh coming from a legislator who sometimes puts the problems on Salt Lake City.
That's great. But we try to do what we can.
I think that in that particular case, I think that there were so many levels that had responsibility, and they are at fault. I believe the Salt Lake City Police Department, they didn't move swiftly and judiciously to address this issue. University of Utah Police Department, the mayor's office. I mean, if it would have been me, I would have fired the individual after seeing what I heard and listening to other law enforcement, and allowed the individual to go through a due process. And that would have been through like a grievance hearing or go through the unions.
One of the things I think is positive for our community is whenever something like this happens, there's a reaction, and sometimes the reactions can be really positive. I know the University of Utah Hospital has changed their protocols.
That's correct.
And no longer is law enforcement interacting with the nurses directly.
I like that.
Who are they interacting with now? Is there like a...
It's the floor supervisor.
Okay, so they
it's not someone involved in patient care.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a really positive change. And
very
so
positive.
We'll be better for it. Yeah. But what happens next? You know, it looks like we'll see some more personnel action.
Yeah,
likely.
Sure. I mean, the cruddy thing is all of this is reactive. Mm-hmm. And instead of getting out in front of it and being proactive about how they were going to do it. And I am usually the last guy who's saying we must fire X, Y, and Z, because I never. And the reason I feel that way is it is easy to judge someone by their worst moment and never get perspective on their best.
Yeah.
And so I'm always from the human factor of it. I'm saying I'm never sure that that's a fire. But I think that they should have had some kind of plan about how this person's being disciplined, this person's being trained.
We're just seeing a sliver.
Yeah, and this person is probably going to end up losing their job, this detective.
You know, you bring up a good point. I agree. I think that when you're a police officer, you have to go through yearly physicals. And what we don't do is that we don't have any mental health evaluations. We have a lot of individuals that are former veterans that are working in law enforcement, and we need to ensure that they have the mental health evaluations on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Well, you know, former prosecutor in me, I just have to add this one last bit. Natalie.
Let's hear it. I didn't know you were a former prosecutor,
don't hold it against
me. He's confessing.
So the former prosecutor in me looks at this and wonders why they were after an innocent man's blood. Right. This is a person who was driving down the road, innocent bystander. So you have to be questioning the motives of why we were doing what we were doing, and let that be really where the policy
guides
is made.
The next.
It's great that we did a separation between law enforcement and the active care nurses. That's great. I think the real step ought to be let's ask ourselves, why are we demanding blood samples from innocent victims?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'll tell you why. And this is between you and me. The why is they're looking for impugning evidence in case this person is somehow contributory negligence.
That could be, but
in a car accident.
Yeah.
I think
which is yucky.
It's yucky. That's not a fun place to go.
What makes this whole underbelly.
Can I tell you something else that makes it awful to me? And I'm gonna speak as a woman here, not from the political center, but I always like to watch what I'll call masculine values and feminine values. So masculine values are power and strength and competition. Feminine values would be compassion and stewardship, maybe order. And those played out in this. I mean, that nurse was being compassionate and orderly.
Mm-hmm.
And this detective was, you know, showing his sort of brute side. And
absolutely.
I just want you two to think for a minute what it's like to be a woman in this society and constantly be bumping into that.
How do you explain to our listeners how you abuse me all the time?
Well, when I'm watching that nurse, I'm like, are you kidding me? She has to stand up to this crap?
Yeah.
You know, so.
No, that was totally uncalled for. That was, in my opinion, bullying.
So my invitation to Salt Lake City is
get in front of this stuff.
Yeah.
Get in front of this. And you know what? This continuously reinforces the need for body cams. We have to ensure that every officer has body cams. You know, because it helps both sides.
I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. On the left, we have Representative Mark Wheatley sitting in for Senator Jim DeBacchus, and on the right, Representative Dan McKay. Let's talk about Senator Hatch. I just want to do it again.
Early?
All right.
Natalie, wow.
It's not our gripe. We can go someplace else. But, well, do you want to talk about special session, Dan?
We can talk about any of those.
Let's do both of them.
So at the same time?
No.
Because special session, I think the lid is out that we're expecting a special session. Apparently, statutorily, we need to, as a legislature, grant emergency powers so that Salt Lake City can take possession of a road. Because even when a road is maintained by the city, it doesn't mean it's owned. It's public right-of-way.
Mm-hmm.
And so granting the public the ability to be excluded
by their city is tough. So I got a weird question. Did you have a special session for the city to sell Main Street to the LDS Church?
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't recall.
I don't think you did. I don't know. That'd be a good thing for you to research.
They can still...
How can you sell it if you can't close it?
Yeah, that has been the speaker's question.
Okay.
And I'm with you. But apparently, I haven't seen the statute. I haven't seen the change. So
you guys
will
know. But the real issue is, I mean, this is something that's been agreed to, and we're just trying to get the law to catch up. But will the special session evolve into something more? Will there be anything else on the call? Are you hearing any rumors, Mark? Or
yeah, I think that there might be. I think there might be some potential legislation as it pertains to driver privilege cards.
Mm-hmm.
And that could certainly be a very interesting
This figures
debate.
Into immigration. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Be interesting. You know, normally the governor won't do anything unless he knows he has the votes, but we'll see.
Well, this will be an interesting conversation.
Okay. How about Senator Hatch? It just keeps thickening, right? We have a senior
the
senator.
The rumors are like kicking up
like
crazy.
Yes, Senate pro tem who can do marvelous things for our state, but he's been in the Senate for a long time.
He has been.
What are we hearing?
You don't get to be Senate pro tem by not being in there a long time.
Yeah, it will
I mean, that's
be,
the very nature of the job.
It will be another 200 years before Utah has a Senate pro tem.
There's no question about it.
A prediction of mine.
Yeah, there's no question about it.
Mark, are you hearing anything for the good senator to be challenged, or will he run? Will he not?
You know what? I have a tremendous respect for Senator Hatch. He's a masterful politician. Sometimes you think he's going left, and he turns and makes a 180 and goes right. And, you know, it's kind of up in the air. I have heard that he will continue to pursue his run for Senate. That's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm hearing the opposite, right? So these are people who are staffers to our current congressional delegation, that it is wide known, potentially, that he will not run and that it is going to be a slugfest between, you know, the favorite child that, you know, Mitt Romney's been talked about.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that
I threw out that I think
run.
Governor Herbert is
and
would
Governor
consider
Herbert
it.
May consider.
Can I want to add something there? I think Governor Herbert would make a great senator. I think his skills lend themselves well to Senate.
I think he will struggle to be in a legislative body.
Okay.
I think when you've been an executive to go that way, it is an entirely different ballgame.
Yeah, but maybe sometimes people are more skilled at you know, the legislative side than the executive side.
Maybe. I'll say that just to be fair to the governor, I also don't think legislators will always make great governors.
Mm-hmm.
Even though people say experience matters, I say,
Well, I've heard that council members.
Unless I'm running for governor, Mark. No, I just want to make everybody knows that I would be a great governor.
But, you know,
we
talk about women, we talk about council members, and I think Jenny Wilson would make a great senator.
Well, you should say that from the political left.
Is she
for sure.
Republican? No.
Mia Love has been mentioned.
Yeah, Mia Love also been mentioned.
That would
surprise
me, but
yeah. So you got Mia Love been mentioned.
Congressman Stewart,
and then there's like a whole bunch of other people that could run, and wouldn't surprise anybody if they jumped out, like Thomas Wright, who's been effective in the Republican circles, and honestly is a very bright individual, and I think would do really
could
well.
Could be an interesting year.
But what about Chris Herrett?
I think he's done.
I don't know. It would not put it past me if Chris decided.
Now, there might be some rumors that he might be interested.
We need to go to gripes, and Dan, we're going to start with you so that Representative Wheatley will be ready for whatever gripe he wants to share.
Okay, so my big gripe is the fires.
Oh, good.
I mean, they are, it seems like
usually
everything
Dan puts
I love
his hand
is
up and
fire.
Says, my great gripe is, and then he doesn't I'm have
lost.
One.
Yeah, I don't perform well at gripe time. But I am just literally watching the fire in the Dalles up through Oregon is just depressing to me. In that Columbia River Valley. That is probably some of the most pristine, beautiful wildland that exists.
When you take the fires and the hurricanes, it really puts us in our place really quickly.
Really quickly. This
you
whole,
know, the human family.
The Harvey element, and everybody's thinking, well, Harvey was terrible, and now we've got its great-grandfather, you know, much larger giant off of Florida. This is, like you said, we're like this little bitty speck on a planet, and it really
it's
puts politics
around.
In perspective, too.
And it continues to, you know, when you talk about natural disasters, it's really disheartening to see the travesty that has occurred, you know, in Texas and has occurred in the Caribbean islands and Puerto Rico, and you know, it's just sad. But it's great to have so many people that come forward to help individuals who are in need. And that's one of the great things that we do in this state is we're great volunteers.
Yeah,
and
so
nobody
true.
Wishes for natural disasters. But
any other
great
gripe from you, Mark?
Well, I have a few gripes. I got a speeding ticket.
No, that's good. Jim always gripes about people going slow in the fast lane.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of my gripes.
It's rivalry week, and I know we're not supposed to talk sports.
Sports.
But I'm trying to think of the gripe for the BYU-Utah game, and I'm just saying I think the Utes are going to light it up.
I think so.
I think
that's not a gripe of mine. That is a big smile for me.
In order for BYU to win, they have to have an offense.
Yeah.
And they didn't really have an offense.
Got to get past the 50-yard line.
Swinging below the belt. I like it.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Representative Dan McKay and Representative Mark Wheatley. The program is produced by Miss Emily Means. Thanks for listening.